This is Out and About on Peoria Public Radio. I'm Nathan Irwin.
And I'm Jen Gordon from Arts Partners of Central Illinois. This week we're talking with David Commande. He will be leading the Heartland Festival Orchestra in the final concert of their season this Saturday at 7:30 p.m. at Five Points, Washington. David, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Glad to be with you.
You've put together a sweeping and rather epic program for the last concert of your season. Can you talk us through the different pieces that are going to be included?
Anchoring the program and concluding it is Carmina Burana, which is an immense work, runs about an hour, by Karl Orff, with 25 individual movements. And the scope of it is of a kind and of a nature that some people at times may choose to make an entire program with that work alone. I wanted to complement that piece with more music, but the music I've chosen in a way highlights aspects of Carmina Burana. So let me introduce the other pieces, and then that gives an introduction in a way to what Carmina is about. So we're opening with the Carnival Overture of Antonin Dvorak, and this overture was one of three that he composed, and their titles originally were Nature, Life, and Love. And the overture that he called Nature became In Nature's Realm, and it has a particular theme relating to nature. The Carnival Overture was earlier called Life, and it is about the exuberance of life, the joy of life, and just sheer energy. And the name comes from an imagined scene in which a traveler, a wanderer, comes to Carnival Festival in a city, and the overture, in a way, like a tone poem, tells the story of this energy and the goings-on and the festivities. There is a moment in the middle of it, however, there with the wanderer comes upon a quiet place, either within or physically somewhere, and we have a chance to hear that nature theme. So the overture is all about energy. It's loud, it's fast, it's exciting, it's thrilling. And that channels many qualities that are in Carmina Burana. And then this central part, we have something which is, first of all, it has the nature's theme. And it channels the peace and a kind of a deeper energy that comes in the quiet and in the solitude. So that's the opening of our concert. And I followed it with a piece called Fratres, which means brothers in Latin, by Estonian composer Arvo Pärt. And Fratres is a lot like a meditation. It's 9 or 10 minutes of superbly beautiful chords played by strings with a kind of dry commentary from percussion. And these are just claves and bass drum. And at moments, the succession of chords and the strings is serene and atmospheric, and you can imagine yourself in a large cathedral where the sound echoes and resonates, and it's like a wonderful meditation. And then you have these boom, boom from the percussion. So we have this energy of the overture, and then we have this meditation of the fratres. Well, there's another resonance between Fratres and Carmina Burana. Carmina Burana, written by Orff, as I mentioned, was inspired by poems from the 11th and 12th century, which were discovered in an old Bavarian monastery in the 1800s and published in Latin and German. It's a mixture of old German and kind of peasant dialect and Latin, and these poems were discovered and then published, and in the 1930s the composer Orff discovered them and was inspired to write this piece. So the poems were written by these so-called galliards, who are defrocked monks and minstrels who were living here and presumably in the monastery or somewhere, and these poems are about the nature of existence. They're about the cruelties of fate, how fate sometimes smiles on you and then betrays you and lays you low. But some of the songs are about drinking and gambling, and some of the songs are celebrating the joys of springtime, human sexuality. Honestly, there are some Latin lyrics that we have translated in a way that's okay. And by the way, since I mentioned it, the lyrics in Latin and German, we're projecting supertitle translations of them as the music is performed. So those will go underneath our typical video projection during the performance. So these songs are celebrating, in many ways, human existence, what it is to be human, even though it has this resonance with monks. And it has many forms that are like church music. It's modal at times. The notation that Orff uses is a lot like old music. At the same time, it's very down to earth. It's very lusty or, you know, there's lots of power. There's lots of pageantry and philosophy in a way. So overall, looking at the whole program, we have this loud, fast, exciting overture celebrating life with its meditative kernel. And then that's followed by a meditation of another kind. And by the way, Arvo Pärt is extremely religious himself. Mm. And he writes, his notation actually resembles old music's notation. Mm. It's kind of interesting, another little resonance with Carmina.
Well, the Carmina is really kind of a fascinating piece. I mean, it's a 20th century composition, and in some places I feel like it does have a 20th century feel to it, but again, the texts are archaic, they're arcane, they're ancient, and the piece itself does have a lot of drama and a lot of intensity to it.
Yes, it does. Intensity is very much the case. And one other thing to mention is that when Orff wrote it, he was conceiving of a multimedia performance. It was not imagined by him to be music alone. So he imagined choreography and acting and general stage action or ballet dancing to go on during the performance of the music. Now, we have that insofar as we're doing the video and we're doing the supertitles and so forth, but we're letting folks really concentrate on the music itself. But energy is what it's all about, extremes of incredibly soft and incredibly loud and powerful. It's a pretty big orchestra as well, and a very large percussion section. So it's big and splashy.
Well, you talked about how Orff envisioned this as a much larger multimedia presentation. Most performances of Carmina Burana don't incorporate that. Why do you think that is? Is it just too difficult to most times to assemble all of those elements, or has it just become the performance tradition of this piece to do it as a choral piece with orchestra?
You know, the first time I performed Carmina, it was with the Boston Ballet, and there was original choreography that had been designed, conceived for performance with it. So it's not that it never happens, but I think for symphonic orchestras, the tendency is, well, we've already got a hands full with a large orchestra and bringing in the large chorus, and by the way, three soloists, and in addition, a children's chorus. So it's already in cast of thousands mode. And then when you want to do all of that, by the way, and have an open stage, just think about it. If you have the chorus and you have a large orchestra, where do you dance?
Yeah.
So I think that, you know, looking at the score and preparing for it, for example, Orff was not living in an age where hiring any number of additional musicians was any kind of a financial consideration. You know, it calls for six percussionists. You can do it with five. You know, it calls for two pianos and celeste and. So in a way, it's magnificent. It comes from another era. But at the same time, the themes, they speak to us. I mean, they're about the world coming to life in the springtime, everything blossoming, human sensuality, I suppose. But also, there's one of the numbers where it's supposed to be the abbot who is singing, and all of his followers are drinkers, and they belong to the sect of the dice god. I mean it's profane, really. It's profane songs. It's really not anti-religious. No one has to fear that they're going to come in and feeling deeply religiously offended, I hope. But at the same time, it's really very much non-sacred, very powerfully secular.
You've talked about the accessibility of ORF and Carmina Burana, particularly O Fortuna and that famous opening melody. But let's go back to the Pärt. You said before the show that he's one of the most popular living composers today. What is it about his music that makes it accessible to today's audiences?
Well, Arvo Pärt writes in a language which is both old and new. He uses a lot of consonants, a lot of harmonies that we can recognize. But he also adds in incredibly powerful and poignant dissonances at the same time. And the music proceeds at a place that allows contemplation. And I think we have a modern hunger for the experience of contemplation and meditation, despite the fact that we all grab for our phones in moments of pause. And, of course, I think of that as one of the greatest benefits of the art form I love so much in music, because it shapes time and it expands us and it gives us a relief from that incredible speed all the time. So I think Arvo Pärt's music does speak to that very deeply. Besides, it's spiritual. In every sense of the word, it doesn't have to have words for you to realize that it's evoking something, I think, greater than mere earthly humanity.
Now, is the rehearsal process for the orchestra very different when your soloist, as it were, is a full choir as opposed to an individual instrumentalist?
Well, obviously, logistically, it's much more demanding. And in the case of Carmina Burana, with the 25 numbers, I would say of them, 14 or 15, maybe one or two more, are focused on the chorus. And then we have a baritone and a high tenor soloist, as well as a soprano soloist, and they have their songs. And then there's a handful where it's combining the soloist with one chorus or another. So it's always being mixed up. And by the way, the flow of the energies from loud to soft and slow to fast is also brilliantly managed by Carl Orff. So to return to your question, the more the numbers, the more energy it takes to conduct, and the more planning in a way you need to do for the rehearsal process. You have to make sure that you get it done in the time you have. So that's an interesting challenge, but I really enjoy that part of it as well.
And since the Peoria Area Civic Chorale is nearby, have you had a chance to spend some time with them in their rehearsal just to make sure that they will be where you need them to be for the concert and so that they can get used to you as a conductor?
Yes, and in fact, the night before last, I spent the evening with the chorus. Joe Henry, their director, has prepared them marvelously, but I had an entire rehearsal so that they would know what I'm doing. And the interesting thing is that 10 years ago, having done it in town with the PACC myself, many of the faces in there are actually returning to the work to do this with me now. So it was a pleasure to work with the chorus. And yes, we got things straight. So a lot of those details were worked out in advance before we're working with the chorus, with the orchestra.
Now, if someone's never been to a live performance, this is a great opportunity to experience one for the first time. Go back to, again, talking about the numbers and just the sheer amount of sound that comes off of a stage with this many performers.
Live performance is incomparable. First of all, you know that you can't be certain exactly what's going to happen next. You know, it has that over a recorded performance. Also, there's the sense of space, the sense that you're sharing this experience with the other audience members. And then when you have 120 members of a chorus there, and you have almost 55 musicians, and you have three soloists, and then a children's choir that comes out, the hall, Five Points Washington, is going to be full of not just humanity, but sound. Yeah. It's a great sensual experience.
Just speaking of the size of these ensembles, I know that ordinarily with the orchestra, you perform with, I would call it a shell. Is that the proper term?
That's right.
So Have you taken that out just to accommodate, you know, the full orchestra, the full chorus, and all the soloists?
A lot of planning went into that, and getting the risers set up properly so that all the chorus members can see me and be seen, and stacking up and so forth. Yes, yes and no. We're using the sides of the shell on the stage, but the very rear portion of it, the so-called back wall that you might see, will not be there, because that gives us added depth, and we very much need it.
Sure.
Yeah.
And as we're all aware, every time the orchestra does a concert, you also team up with a community partner. So who's your community partner for this concert? And tell us a little bit about them.
Well, our partner for this concert is the Heartland Community Health Clinic. And it's a wonderful organization that ensures that absolutely everyone can get quality health care regardless of means and other issues like insurance and so forth. So they're doing great work, and thank goodness they're there.
David Commande is the artistic director of the Heartland Festival Orchestra. Their final concert of the season features a performance of Carl Orff's Carmina Burana with the Peoria Area Civic Chorale. The concert is tomorrow night at 7:30 at Five Points, Washington. David, thank you again.
Thank you.
Sculpture Walk Peoria opens its second annual exhibit this Saturday along Washington Street between Fulton and State. Come walk the walk, meet the artists, and see the 16 large-scale sculptures featured on this year's walk. The event runs from 1:30 p.m. to 4 p.m. on Saturday. For more information, visit www.sculpturewalkpeoria.org.
And the Peoria Bach Festival gets underway this weekend. James Kibbe presents an organ recital on Sunday featuring the Toccata and Fugue in D minor and a piece Bach wrote as a teenager. That concert is Sunday night at 7:30. The festival continues all week with concerts, lectures, and other events. It ends on Sunday, June 12th.
Out and About is a production of Peoria Public Radio and Arts Partners of Central Illinois. Each week, we connect you to the arts community by talking with local arts leaders and performers.
You can learn more about Peoria Public Radio when you go to our website, peoriapublicradio.org. I'm Nathan Irwin, and this is Out and About.